Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, welcome back to In the Pink with me, Natalie Pinkham, and Bose, helping you stay connected through the lockdown and beyond. And when I say beyond, isn't it lovely just to be easing ever so slightly? My kids went back to school and nursery this week. It's kind of strange though, the house feels really empty and quiet, but they're loving it and seeing all their friends again, so it's got to be a good thing. Thank you so much for all your feedback on the various guests that we've had lately. We've got another cracker on the way. Now, this is a television star who has been in the industry for many, many years. But what you may not know is she started out as a journalist in print, and she got an incredibly curious brain. She likes to ask some of the hard questions, and she's got strong opinions and views on plenty of things. And she gives us a great behind-the-scenes account of X Factor. I am, of course, talking about Kate Thornton. I had a lovely chat with her a few weeks ago now, so it relates to the beginning of the lockdown in a lot of our conversation. But anyway, I think you'll find a lot of what she says absolutely fascinating. Here she is, Kate Thornton.
How lovely to see your face and to hear
and yours.
How are you?
All right. Finding out, this is day 17 for me. Day 17. And yeah, just getting my head around it all, trying to stay really positive. And sometimes you have, I have the odd hour where I slip off my positive step.
Yeah.
Fall face first into a glass of wine and then I get over it. But no, mainly positive, trying to keep some structure in my day and trying to keep some perspective on all of this.
So, did you say 17 because you've had symptoms or because you were being extra cautious from the start? Because most people have just had just over a week of full lockdown.
Yeah. No, I had a letter from a producer on a show. So I'd been on Laura Whitmore's Five Live show. And I got a letter saying that one of the guests that had been on the show in the studio with us, and I didn't have huge contact with this guy, had subsequently flown back to Australia and been diagnosed as having COVID-19. Therefore, I had been in close enough proximity with somebody that I decided to self-isolate, even though I've still not shown what I know to be symptoms or I believe to be symptoms, but it just felt like it was the right thing to do.
Well, good on you for doing the right thing. It is a scary time. I think you've touched on it then about the positivity. That just seems to be everything. And I think that, I don't know about you, being a mum, homeschooling, you're not just keeping your own morale up, you're keeping that up of theirs, and the whole house.
Trying to manage what you message out to them on this, trying to make sure that when my son walks into a room, that I turn the news down, because I want to manage how this is messaged to him and not for him to see some of the stuff that's quite rightly being broadcast, because we need to be aware of just how serious this is. But some of it, for an 11-year-old mind, I'm just mindful is probably a little bit too much. And where I live, so I'm in Dulwich, my local hospital is King's, and King's this morning announced that tragically a 13-year-old boy had passed away yesterday there. And yeah, it just, that's on my doorstep, you know. My son's going to turn 12 in lockdown. That could be, it just, yeah, that stuff it's one of those stories that I actually couldn't read to the end because I had too many tears in my eyes. You know, his family couldn't be with him. He died alone. And, you know, mum in me just can't really begin to process what that family are going through. So it's just unbelievably sad. And every death is sad. But a 13-year-old boy with no underlying health conditions just kind of, puts a horrible new lens on it. Because really, we were told our children are safe. Well, not that they're safe, but they're not as susceptible. And predominantly that is the truth in terms of the data that's coming out of this. But I don't know.
That's no comfort to the boy's family, you know?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I've just literally, thank you for moving today, by the way, but I've literally just started a new show, which I'm recording from home. And I've just done an interview with an A&E doctor, Dr. Alex George, he works at University Hospital in Lewisham. They were admitting 20 to 30 COVID-19 patients to intensive care last week. So you start to peer into what is the eye of the storm, and it's perspective that you probably shouldn't have a look at unless you're in a really strong frame of mind rather than having a wobble.
So, you know, it is obviously an incredibly tough time. One thing that I'm finding, and I don't know about you, in terms of keeping the morale up, you're absolutely right to limit the amount of news that you watch, because you find yourself getting like sucked into it, don't you? And you just think, I'll just watch another minute and another minute, another minute. Before you know it, it's sort of permeating every aspect of family life because it's on in every room. But one thing I found the other day was I could sense that everyone was getting a little bit low. And we did a dance off and we filmed a dance off and we sent it on and sent the challenge on and on and on. And some of the responses I got, I mean, I'm still laughing now.
That's brilliant. Now you've got to find ways to cope. For me, Zoom's become like my social life. So we all have these kind of big girl ensemble collective get-togethers, and everybody kind of opens a bottle of wine or pours himself a gin and tonic. And we just sit and we chat and we offload and we listen. And, you know, 1 minute you're laughing, the next minute somebody's having a little cry. And all of those things are great because we need to release all of that. So that's been really helpful. But yeah, challenges, anything really that will just distract.
Yeah.
I think, and it's not... It's not wrong to distract yourself at a time like this. I've now, because I am a news junkie at the best of times, so I had to, I mean, I think for the first week, I just was glued to the news, and to the point that I'd get into bed and I could hear the BBC News bed going in my head, like, I thought, oh my God, I could have, you know, this is ridiculous. So I kind of weaned myself off it. Now what I do, and again, I found that structure is really important. So I get up at the same time every day, spend homeschooling, dreading the Easter holidays, just saying.
Are you going to keep homeschooling up during the Easter holidays, or are you going to let him have fun?
Like, I think his school will be brilliant and they are going to set him projects. So I'll help him with his projects, but just they need the downtime. We forget this is so much for their little heads. That actually a chance to just be is probably a good thing. But personally for me, I would love homeschooling to continue because it gives him structure.
Yeah.
But do they need time to reflect and figure this out? Probably. So it's probably not a bad thing. He'll have done 2 weeks of homeschool by the time he breaks up. So we'll see. I'll just take it day by day.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of word searches and puzzle books, and we've got board games, and we're real card sharks, me and Ben. We love a game of blackjack. So, but we're trying not to do everything at once. I'm like, let's save the cards. Save the cards for week six, because there's going to be a week six, you know? So just trying to eke it all out. But no, what I was saying, I'm going to go back and say about the news, is I've now kind of... built it into my day, because I'm a control freak. I hold my hands up. I need structure. I work well with structure. So I get up in the morning and I read the news, and then I put it to one side and I work and I do my workouts and I work with Ben. And then I down tools at 5 o'clock,
and I watch the press briefings because I want to hear from the people that are leading us through this, from the horse's mouth, if you like. So I watch that, and then I go back at 10 o'clock, and I've literally fallen slightly in love with Tom Bradby at ITV and Robert Peston, who's still self-isolating. I'm very worried about Robert. He seems well, though. Even swearing during press conferences from Downing Street, which is slightly brilliant. I heard him come on air one day, just about to ask his question. He went, oh, shit. I thought, that's why I love you, Robert. You're real. So I watched them. I find ITV's news output, I think, has been brilliantly well-balanced and challenging and fair and pitched perfectly. So that's my news for the day. And then I don't look at it anymore. But weirdly, I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to just eat my way through Netflix and Amazon Prime. I haven't watched anything. I can't concentrate on anything. I can't follow a narrative. I just find myself kind of, my mind can't do it at the moment. I'm hoping that will change. I read books. I can't follow a box set.
And is that because your mind is elsewhere, or is it because, you know, many of us actually revel in the escapism of a box set at the moment?
And if you've got any recommendations, I will dive on in.
We've just watched Hunters on Amazon with Al Pacino, and it's about a vigilante group in the 70s in New York who are Nazi hunters. I've got to say, it's pretty violent, but it is brilliantly, brilliantly done. There's a lot of dark humour in it, but also incredible sadness, because it takes you back to the Holocaust. I mean, I've sobbed a few times, but I've also laughed a lot. I think brilliantly done. It's bloody hard to find something that both my husband and I will watch. We've exhausted all sports documentaries. We've done that, and then beyond that, we don't actually, the Venn diagram doesn't cross over enough.
Well, I tell you, there's a great series that I watched on, I think it's Netflix. If you want a good doc series that tells a great story, but it's not sports, so it's music, it's called The Defiant Ones.
Oh, I've seen it. It's amazing.
Amazing.
One of the best ever.
Isn't it? It's great.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
I loved that. So I'm looking for those little pearls.
I know.
I think those are the things. I just need to find something that's going to take me away from my constant thinking.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about the news in terms of what's happening outside of our four walls. I'm thinking about cleaning our four walls, cooking within our four walls, and I just think I need to, I'm sort of week two and a bit. It's like when you go on holiday, it takes you a few weeks to relax, you know, a few days to relax into it. Mm-hmm. I think I just need to slow down a little bit.
And take the pressure off yourself, maybe slightly.
Yeah, stop cleaning.
An inquisitive mind. There's the news hack is in you. You started out as a journalist, didn't you?
Yeah. And I still consider myself to be, a journalist in terms of how I present shows, the podcasts I do. I spend hours researching every guest, and the questions are carefully constructed so that it's a gate that opens up a wider conversation to get the very best out of the guests. So yeah, I came to London when I was 19 to study journalism. I had to get a job very quickly on a work placement. And so I started out at the Mirror and became their youth columnist because they just had no young people there. So I lucked out, and then I didn't stay very long. Within 18 months, I'd jumped ship, and I was the editor of Smash Hits when I was 21, which was...
Unbelievable. Editor, yeah. 21.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a teenage magazine, so I guess it should be steered by somebody that, you know, can remember their teens. But more importantly, I was the first woman to edit that magazine, and that felt like... In a year where kind of girl power imploded and exploded around the world, I felt like, you know, I had my own little experience of girl power by, putting a woman in the chair.
Very cool. And what were your kind of scoops when you were a journalist, both at the Daily Mirror and Smash Hits? What were your defining moments?
With Smash Hits, I think it had to be around the Spice Girls, really. I don't think I had any big scoops at the Mirror. I wasn't very scoopy. But I think when I moved into my first television role, it was for a current affairs show. And we'd only been on air 8 weeks when Diana died, Princess Diana. And we were a live Sunday lunchtime news show. And she died in the early hours of Sunday morning and they kept us on air. And I had to cut together a tribute to Diana with it through the kind of lens of Princess for the Young, because it was a youth current affairs show. And I had to find a piece of music to go with that tribute. And I had, the music library was shut because it was a Sunday. And all I had in my car that was in any way appropriate, apart from banging Ibiza dance tunes, was Candle in the Wind by Elton John. And so I played that out over that tribute. And obviously that song went out and on to become the biggest selling song in the world of all time. Not because I did that, but because somebody would have played it. But
it started with you.
I don't know that it started with me. Sky News, Kay Burley had some sort of Twitter spat recently with Nick Knowles, who was my co-presenter on the show. And she'd said that they'd played it first, which, you know, maybe they did. I don't know. I was on air. I'm not going to challenge her. But Nick did. He waded in with both feet and was like, I think you're fine. And I was like, whoa, okay, I'll let you two work this one out. I don't care who went first. It felt like the best thing I had in that moment to help to score a moment of national mourning.
Wow, that was incredibly perceptive of you, because obviously the song was originally written for Marilyn Monroe, wasn't it?
She was our man. Well, for that generation, for that moment in time back in 97, that's what she was.
Absolutely. But to have that presence of mind at a young age, but also when everyone's in shock, you must be very proud of that moment.
I am looking back now. At the time, it was, I can remember it well. It was the 90s. I had very low-rider jeans on. And I remember being literally just rifling through my car. All of our production was based in a porter cabin in a car park in Southampton. And I can still remember now trying to jar the door open of the library, the sound library. Just, I've got to get some music. And they were like, it's shut. It was like my car, rifling through the car. And then I found Elton John's Greatest Hits. It's like, there's got to be something. That's the one. Track listing, ran my finger down it. That's the one. Put that on. And I don't think it was any more thought out than that. I was on a deadline.
Well, I'm impressed.
Okay, time for Bose's handy tips about how we can all cope a bit better over the next few weeks and potentially months under lockdown. I think that's part of the problem, isn't it? We just don't know how long this is going to last. And that lack of control over our own lives can let anxiety creep in. But hopefully, if we can all follow these little nuggets of advice, it may just help. Okay, first of all, take time for yourself to stay centered and sane. Number two, seize moments of calm. They may be few and far between, but they are out there. You just need to grab them with both hands. Number three, find your sanctuary away from the chaos. Now, if like me, your whole house is chaotic, then that might be hard, but there must be a little corner somewhere where you can take yourself off and just have a moment or two. Because remember, timeouts aren't just for kids. It's really important to take a little me time because it can go a long way. I know that sounds a bit selfish because I always feel guilty if I go off and read a book or listen to some music or have a bath or all three at the same time. But I think and hope that we all come back to our jobs in the house with the kids, with our family, as better mothers, better partners, more productive if we have taken a bit of time out. Cabin fever is real. So one way to smash that oppressive feeling is to learn something new. Take up a new hobby, for example. Don't resist and fight the new norm. Embrace it. Shape it to suit you. For example, you could move rooms, change the layout at your home, create a new space dedicated to your new hobby. Make working for home work for you. Don't be afraid of the silence, if indeed it exists at any point during your day. It can be truly golden after all. Try to block out unhelpful noise, and that will also reduce your anxiety. It's not where you work, it's how you work. So make it work for you with a little bit of help from Bose.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Feel more, do more, be more. With Bose.
And your big break, you talked about the current affairs program in television, but obviously I guess what most people know you for is X Factor. Yeah. How does a curious journalistic brain like yours cope with doing a show like that well, I'm not going to put words into your mouth, but seems quite manufactured maybe? Yes. And I presume you would have asked a lot of questions of that at the time.
Yeah, for sure. I'll give you some kind of background to how I ended up on that show. So when I was at Smash Hits, I worked very closely with Simon Fuller, who managed the Spice Girls. I like Simon enormously. I think he's a man of huge intelligence and integrity, and integrity is so important. And so I'd forged a relationship with him, and I always thought he was a bit of a visionary. And I was also separately working with Simon Carroll, who's this A&R guy that used to ring me up and try to pitch like Robson and Jerome to go on the cover, or could I do a lyrics pull out on the Power Rangers single he was putting out. And I liked Simon, and again, enormously. They're two very different characters, but he was a brilliant salesman. He was great company, very funny. And whilst I was doing my first current affairs show in telly, they had gone on to start the idea of Pop Idol. So they'd gone and pitched that together. And I ended up getting the job as the ITV2, as the host of the ITV2 show on Pop Idol. And what had happened there was ITV2 had never done a spin-off show before, but Pop Idol had been on air, I think, 6 weeks, and it was doing really, really great numbers. And I got this call saying, do you fancy doing the spin-off show? I think Simon Fuller had put me forward for it, one of the Simons, maybe Cowell, I don't know. And I went in and we did 11 hours of output a week of literally just people like Darius stood next to a piano warming up and me just constantly asking questions and literally putting the whole process under a microscope. So actually, I felt like I'd had a chance to... There was a massive moment in popular culture unfolding and I was right in the heart of it going, what about this? What about that? And the storytelling opportunities actually were enormous. And you think about that first series, we had Gareth Gates with his stutter, you know, the boy that sang like an angel but couldn't speak. We had Will Young, the last person to be seen for the auditions, who I'd actually previously cast on This Morning alongside Simon Cowell in a boy band that we put together. Weird. I know, right? Can you believe it? Alongside Lee Ryan and Anthony Costa. I know. That's where they met. Weird. And then you had Darius, the comeback kid, who had been ridiculed when he'd done Pop Stars The Rivals, but came back onto Pop Idol and reinvented himself. So actually, there were these three amazing storylines that were running, and I was helping to, almost like I was helping to write them. And they were everywhere. That was such a huge moment. After Pop Idol, we were asked to advise the government on how to inspire young people to vote. What's that all about? You know, I think people forget what a kind of seismic moment it was. And at the end of the second season, we only did two seasons here, I was then asked, I was pulled aside and asked by ITV, would I go and host X Factor? So that's how I ended up doing that show. And obviously being the main host on ITV1 was a very different role to asking a gazillion questions for 11 hours a week on ITV2. But I loved both shows and I was very proud of them. And, you know, whatever the X Factor's gone on to be, for the years that I was there, I loved what I did and I loved who I worked with. And I'm still in touch with so many from the team. And it was a wonderful moment for me in my working life. And took me into a different place. It took me into those big shiny full Saturday night studios that I'd never thought I'd end up in. And sometimes, you know, there's a lesson in that. It's like, stop planning the hell out of your life, because life will happen while you're busy making plans.
That's so true. Did you have much kind of input on the editorial side of things? Because clearly both Simons respected your production nous, if you like, but you are fronting it. How much control did you have over what you were saying, how the show was constructed?
On the ITV2 show, loads, because we were such a small team. No spin-off show had ever been done before. We were literally making it up as we were going along, so tons and tons. And then the role was very different as the main host on X Factor. You know, it was a hello, welcome, that was, this is, up next. That was my job. I was like a traffic cop. So actually, when you think about it like that, I'm an on-screen narrator. I'm probably no more important than that. And I'm just the girl that gets the judges on and off the stage, the singers on and off the stage, reads out the numbers for the public. We'll be back after this break. Up next. Right. That's all it is. So they're very different roles. So I had very little input on X Factor beyond I would sit and meet with the executive producer once a week and we would write the script. But the script had to be tight. You know, those shows, you don't want to waste moments on those shows on scripted links. Nobody tunes in for the presenter, you know, as
I know you say that, but it does make a big difference if you like the presenter.
You've got to like them, but they're not the call. But, you know, they're not going to put bums on seats. What you're tuning in for is those moments where somebody stands up and sings and it brings the house down, where they're moved emotionally afterwards in an interview scenario. That's where I suppose I had a role to play, was making sure that I was the arm around the contestants. Mm. I was their big sister, I hope.
Yeah, you were so good at that.
Okay.
No, but naturally, it was authentic.
Yeah, it was authentic. I genuinely loved what I did on that show. I loved the people that I worked with. I loved the contestants. I still message back and forth with, you know, Brenda now. Brenda Edwards she used to bring her kids in to use my dressing room on a Friday to do their homework. You know, Jamal, who now runs the world. And Chico, I chat to on Facebook. And Michelle McManus, I check in on from Pop Idol. Will Young is still, you know, somebody I consider a friend. So, yeah, those shows, certainly in their infancy, were huge. We got used to them after a while. But for those first 3 or 4 years, they were massive.
Absolutely massive. It seemed to come to a fairly abrupt end, certainly from the outside looking in. In for you, what actually happened?
What you've read, you know. I mean, it's gosh, you know what? It's funny you say that. What actually happened? I'm thinking, what did actually happen? It's such a long time ago. They didn't renew my contract, having said that they would, and by they I mean Simon. You know, it's his show, his gig. And I'd had conversations, there'd been speculation in the press that I was going to get the push. And I asked, you know, is that the case? And if it is, please, can you just give me the dignity of resigning? You know, don't throw me out as a cheap headline, because hopefully our friendship and our history would qualify that I mean a little bit more than that. But that didn't happen.
Does that still hurt now?
No, Jesus, no.
Did it not at the time? Come on. If you loved it.
A little bit, but listen, you're asking me that in the middle of a pandemic. True. Where people are losing their lives, and we are putting far too much importance next to what is an anecdote at best in my life.
Sure, but also not just an anecdote, a turning point, and you've obviously gone on.
But I think people expect it to mean more than it does. It's a job. Mm. You know, I've had lots of jobs before it, and I've had lots of jobs since. And it's just a job. And yes, it hurt. It hurt more that I felt like somebody that I considered to be a friend hadn't been upfront with me. Mm. You know, being pushed out of a show in this industry, sorry, if you can't handle that, you shouldn't be doing it, because them's the breaks, you know. I'm sure
it was your first big lesson in that, wasn't it? Was that the first time? And what did you think?
Really public. It was very public. You know, it was on the news at 10. It was embarrassing. It was humiliating, and it kind of burnt for a bit. And then you process it, you know, and you have to go, I'm not letting this define me. You know, somebody else made a decision that has impacted my life, and I had no control over that, but I do have control over how I let it impact me. And I decided that what I would do with that is go, do you know what? That was brilliant. It gave me, as you say, a turning point in my career, but it's up to me now to take it forward and do something else with it. And that's what I've done. And yeah, it's tough, and you develop the skin of a bloody rhino. And I'm just only grateful that it happened in a time pre-social media. Otherwise, I'm sure it would have hurt a lot more now. You know, that would have really hurt. And maybe I'm playing it down. Maybe it did mean more at the time. I truly, you know, I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to be as honest as I can with you. But I have to say I enjoyed working on the show. I didn't enjoy the way it ended, but I refused to let the way it ended inform the memories I have of what were some really bloody great years.
Did they ever give you a reason?
No, they don't have to. You know, they just decide, do they want to renew your contract or do they not? It was time for a change, was what I was told. So, no.
They do. I think you deserve more than that. But anyway, you know.
Oh, thank you. But you know what? That's the business, right? You know, if I'd have been delivering news like that to somebody, would I have done it in the same way? 100% no. Would I have treated somebody with a greater level of respect? Yes, of course. But that's me.
I'm only
accountable for my behaviour. I can't be accountable for the way somebody else behaves.
Absolutely. I do just think, though, that you've talked about that rhino thick skin, and I do think most people watching you on television or listening to this podcast, they do kind of assume that you have some kind of superhuman ability.
No, we don't.
You are a human being, and we've seen cases very recently about just how crippling it can be for it all to be played out in public. And I think that's the thing we need to be a bit kinder about. And
what I'm saying, you know, I wouldn't have done it the way it was done had I been the person making those calls. And I think, yeah, you have to remember it was a different time then. I think we're far more mindful and kind. Certainly in the wake of the, you know, and it's tragic what happened with Caroline, utterly tragic. And it's not just her, you know, there's people impacted by, you could spend hours talking about it and never do it a full service and do it justice. You know, it bloody hurts, but you have to decide how you let it impact you. And that's something I gave a lot of thought to. And I did, you know, don't get me wrong, the first few months, it really, like I said, it burnt. That's probably the best way of describing it. I felt burnt and humiliated because people were really, really kind and lovely, but it's all anyone ever talked to me about for months. So I'd go out and just go to Sainsbury's and they'd be like, oh, you'd always get the cocked head and the, you okay? And they mean really well. But after a while, it's so diminishing. You know, you feel like that you're that you're at one endless pity party.
Well, and like you've been dumped by your friend, isn't it?
Of course, because it's like, you know, that doesn't go on the freaking news at 10, does it? But in the end, you know, actually, what you do in that moment is when somebody cocks their head and says, "Are you okay?" You just go, I'm absolutely fine. It was a job. How are you? Are you all right? Because do you know what? Most people losing their jobs, and I say this at a time when people are facing massive financial uncertainty. I lost a job in a really public way. But let's be honest, I was paid very handsomely for it, and it gave me enough to put in the bank to lick my wounds and repair myself, which is a luxury most people do not have afforded to them when they are removed from a job that they love. So am I feeling sorry for myself? No. Well, you know, there are people way in way worse positions than I was left. And in the end, I had to kind of just take control of this kind of lovely support and sympathy that came from people and just go, do you know what? I'm fine. It's just a job. It really is just a job.
In the Pink and Bose really want to help during this lockdown. Now, whether we can or not is another question, but we can try, and we're going to do that by giving away some more Bose noise cancelling headphones. To win them, just share mini anecdotes from your time in lockdown and give us some feedback on this series. Always put in the hashtag Bose and tag in a couple of mates to do the same, and you never know, those headphones could be yours. Good luck, stay safe, and stay connected.
You're anything but diminished. And I think that resilience has sort of shone through with your career. And I feel like in some ways, a show like Loose Women actually really shows you for who you are and gave you much more scope to do more, have more opinions and maybe sort of channel the conversation in the way that you see fit, which is what I feel you're really good at.
I loved that show. And I'm still really good friends with the girls on the show. Yeah, it was wonderful. That came at a time in my life. I just had a baby. I was, how old was Ben? He was coming up 18 months when I joined. And again, that's another show where I look back and I go, that was so much fun. That was so much fun. And that's exactly the same perspective I applied to The X Factor, to Pop Idol. But actually, the shows that I loved making more than any were when I was a travel reporter for the BBC. That, for me, if I could go back and if I had to go through my CV and pull out one show that I'd go back to in a heartbeat, it would be that. Yeah, sadly, it's not going to happen anytime soon. Maybe I'm rose-tinting my glasses far too much.
I think we're all craving craving at the moment. I'm walking down to the bus stop, let alone going over to Monaco for free. Bloody hell.
How have you navigated those tricky moments in your career? Have you had any experience of those? Because I think it's really helpful for people to listen to a conversation like this, because actually I think our greatest lessons in life come from the toughest moments.
100%.
And it took me a while, like you were saying with The X Factor, for me to stop feeling, to take control of that narrative and just to go, okay, it's fine. It's actually, because it was fine. You have to kind of own those moments a little bit.
I think the best thing, I definitely have a support network away from television, which, and actually this is some advice that I got when I saw a therapist after Caroline died, who was giving sort of grief advice, at this lovely lady called Julia Samuel. And she was explaining to me that the importance, particularly if you're in the public eye, of creating an alter ego so that you don't put the whole you out there, so that the real you is in some way guarded and safe. And that's something that I just wished so much for Caroline, but she was just so exposed, and she's such a beautiful, fragile, I still talk about her in the present because I can't get my head around it, but she's so fragile and so brilliant at everything she did that she was always going to be a star, but she didn't hold enough of her own self back to protect it, if you know what I mean. So look, I don't know what the answers are. You do need to be robust in life, whatever you do, and
but you don't have to be so robust that you pretend you're impenetrable, because it's like, I mean, listen, I'm giving you completely contradictory statements here, because nothing's ever black and white when it comes to the complexities of how somebody feels and how they're treated on, especially when we talk about Caroline and how she must have been feeling with what was going on in her life, the way people felt that they were licensed to comment on it. That's really tricky. You know, when I said to you, well, what happened with The X Factor, well, I don't know if I would have coped as well and bounced back as quickly if social media had been a thing then. Because it was hard. I mean, I could just go, I'm not going to read the newspapers. Mm. And I just disengage. And of course you can do that with social media to a degree. But I think it's something that, you know, I think we were really, we were looking at ourselves a lot after what happened with Caroline and behaviours. And I know that obviously coronavirus has completely overtaken everybody's conversations, but I hope we return to that and that there is some legacy for her, which is a kinder, nicer way of being. The internet needs to become kinder.
I really hope so. I think it's the fact that a comment from somebody anywhere in the world can just pop up in your bedroom or your living room, and it just attacks you right there and then in that moment. So, you know, you may have decided, made a conscious effort not to watch the news or pick up papers, but suddenly people can directly jab at you. And yeah. Obviously you've got to let them because you've got to open social media, but there is an addictive element to that as well. I mean, I think this, as you say, this is a conversation which is far greater, and we can't do it justice, but I think we should return to it. And so, yeah,
I think, you know, part of me goes, I don't want to have this conversation because I don't have the answers. But that actually, nobody's listening for the answers. They're listening for a reasonable, intelligent debate. And a debate takes time. We can't give that in a soundbite or 140 characters. It deserves more than that. And she deserves more than that. And other people that have felt the same pain that Caroline was obviously carrying with her, they deserve a wider conversation. So I kind of go back and forth on this, like, should I jump in and say something and spark debate? But I'm mindful of saying something that's then taken out of context and it becomes more damaging than helpful. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of me goes, but don't be ridiculous. This needs to be talked about. You have a platform, you must use it. So I go back and forth on it. I really do. But I would welcome an intelligent conversation about how we can find a better way forward once everybody feels like they are back in some sort of normal living and the world as we once knew it before lockdown.
What would be good is a kind of round table discussion, I think, with, you know, a handful of people that can offer different perspectives. I mean, I think from your experience working at the Daily Mirror, although it was brief, you have always sort of dipped in and out of that journalist, put your journalist hat back on and off.
Train as a journalist, you never stop thinking about, you're the same with the work that you do, even with F1, you're reporting a story, the story of the race, the story of that driver. That's what a journalist is. And I, even when I hosted the X Factor, I was telling, you know, if we had 12 contestants on, I had 12 stories to tell that night. That's the way I looked at it. On Loose Women, we had 4 topics to run and 2 guests. That's 6 stories to tell, right? That's, you go out, you host this morning, it's 9 segments. That's 9 stories to tell. That's the way I approach everything. And I think once you've been trained to think like that, you kind of can't help it. Mm. You kind of, you know, you are, I would consider you a journalist. Yeah. I don't, and I'm sure you consider yourself one too.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because in the past I've thought of journalism as, well, a journalist as being a bit of a dirty word. And I know that's unfair because there's some absolutely brilliant ones out there that we couldn't do without. But I was on the receiving end of a couple of bad stories, and I thought, oh, you know, I just find that. And actually, my mum originally trained as a journalist. She's a barrister now, but she started, and she said what put her off was she was working for the local newspaper, and there was a road traffic accident where a young boy was killed, and she was sent by her editor to the front door to knock on the parents' door, and she was shaking in her boots. She absolutely knew it wasn't and didn't feel the right thing to be doing, and the father came out and said, shame on you, and mum literally put down her pad and pencil and never did it again. She loves writing. She's definitely, like you, kind of approaches things with that kind of framework. But I think that the problem is it's an umbrella term across so many things. We obviously can't do without them. But do you feel that, do you feel like the papers get a bad rap? Do you feel, not just in Caroline's case, but sort of generally at the moment, where do you feel we're placed with the tabloids at the moment in this country?
The tabloids are the tabloids. When I think about great journalism, I think about Tom Bradby on the News at 10. I think of Emily Andrews, their health correspondent, bringing us the insight that she's been delivering. Robert Peston challenging, and just using that as a news team. That's journalism. I think of the most brilliant book that I read this year, Catch and Kill by Ronan Farrow, which was his. And he's done it as a podcast as well, so you can listen to it in podcast form, which was his story of exposing Harvey Weinstein and then later Matt Lauer on the Today Show for their sexual misconduct and wrongdoing. That's journalism, and you're right. When somebody says, I'm a journalist, you automatically think of it in slightly grubby terms. But actually, at a time like this, when we are all on lockdown and our information is delivered to us by journalists, they are key workers. You know, they are delivering news to us. Don't confuse one with the other. A great journalist is a great storyteller, a great deliverer of news. And there are lots of them out there at the moment doing a brilliant job keeping us informed so that we can keep ourselves safe. And I think to sit and talk about a sidebar of journalism, which is tabloid journalism, is exactly that. It's a sidebar of journalism, but actually look at the grand landscape. There is some brilliant storytelling happening in the world at the moment. And I would implore anybody, if you really want to understand what a great journalist is, go and read Catch and Kill. Go and listen to the podcast. It will blow your mind.
Really? And you're right, because it's about holding people to account as well.
And that's why I wanted to become a journalist. I didn't want to go and knock on somebody's door in the shoes that your mum was put in. I wouldn't have done that. I couldn't do that. But do I want to impart conversation and information? And yeah, I do. I really do. And I'm really proud to do that. And the podcast that I host, White Wine Question Time, really proud of the stories that it elicits from people and enables them to show the very best of themselves. And that for me is great. That's great journalism. So I think let's just park the tabloids, because at the moment, especially with where we are, I mean, you can debate what they do and how they do it, but still millions of people buy them and read them. But I think there are other sources of great journalism that we are reliant on at the moment. And actually, our broadcasters, our journalists that are delivering the news, that are helping to keep us safe right now, they are important. They
and
really
I guess the beauty of podcasts, and I'm sure yours, White Wine Question Time, I love the title, the beauty of them is that they're not edited, they're not scripted, they're you in your own words. And I think that's why people feel safe in them, because they can't have their words twisted in, say, the way a tabloid would.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, and also I think in an age where we became so deficient in our attention spans, like everything was quicker, quicker, quicker. You know, I mean, I work in digital content now as well. And it's like, no, you've got to do that in under a minute. It's like, why? Why do we have to do it in under a minute? Jesus, can people not concentrate for a minute? And actually what podcasts did was they slowed down the conversation. They enabled it to breathe and for detail to underpin it. And that's brilliant and beautiful and necessary sometimes. You can't tell everything quickly. And it reintroduced the art of conversation, which I think was in danger of becoming lost. You know, on one of the episodes we did with the host of Control Alt Delete, Emma Gannon, I picked up on something that she had been talking about on one of her podcasts, which was, you know, their generation. So you're kind of talking 10 years younger than me, people early 30s, I suppose. She's like, you know, nobody just phones people now. And I thought, well, why not? No, you can't just phone somebody, they'll think someone's died. What you've got to do is text them to tell them that you're calling. I was like, no, I'm not having this. Conversation is so important. It really is. It's all we have. It's like the ability to communicate. And we don't have to type it out. We can speak it sometimes. And you can phone somebody without scheduling a call and sending them a calendar invite.
Please talk to my husband, because he is... exactly from her school of thought. He will, if I ring him, he'll be like, yes, what's the matter? And
just ringing.
I'm just calling. And the amount of times he wants to schedule things in, I will be upset. I've come up to the spare room, the only quiet room in the house. We're subbing in and out of this room to do Zoom calls, because the rest of the house is absolute carnage.
Hey, yeah.
But quite regularly, I'll be up here just getting messages from him on my phone saying, yeah. Pinky, I need to schedule 10 minutes with you. And I'm like, I'm only upstairs, mate.
Just schedule 10 minutes with you. No. Talk to your mum about a good divorce lawyer. End of. Joking, by the way. But yeah, I love the conversation. You know, I love the podcast. It's a celebration of conversation, and it proves that we can still, you know, give our attention to something that's more than 3 minutes or a minute or 1 minute 30 or 140 characters. And that's necessary. And at the moment, I think people are finding great comfort in podcasts. especially when they are on lockdown. And if you're, you know, some people, they might be feeling like they don't want to engage in a conversation, but that's not to say they don't want to listen to one.
Mm.
And I think, you know, there is something in that. And you have a very super deep connection with listeners of your podcast, especially the ones that listen to every episode. You know, I feel like I have grown a community. I know all the people that post, and I know which one's a headmistress, who's going through chemotherapy, which one lives in Spain. Oh, this one's just relocated to Australia. And, you know, our podcast helps her feel connected to home. I've never had that on telly. That's special.
That's really special. Now, I'm conscious of the time. It's 25.
I've got to go. I'm sorry, babe. I've got to go and do a podcast.
Yay! Listen, it's so lovely to talk to you. And I hope we can pick this up again soon.
I really hope you're well and safe. And don't let your husband schedule time with you. He should always have time for you. You're his wife, his queen, his everything.
This is true. I tell you what, he's probably outside listening to a podcast as we speak. loads of love. Thank you so much for your time. And yeah, look after yourself, man.
I will do. Lots of love.
Bye.
Thank you so much for your time, Kate. Lovely to chat. I felt like we just scraped the surface on a few topics there that probably need exploring a bit further. So perhaps when lockdown's completely lifted and we can all get together in big groups, we can have a kind of round table discussion on some of the points raised, because I know that plenty of people would like to just push the debate forward a bit more. Anyway, thank you also for your company. And don't forget, you can still win those Bose noise cancelling headphones. Rate, review and subscribe, tag your friends in, put the hashtag Bose, and you could be winning a pair, which would be lovely, because they are brilliant, they really are. Okay, plenty more guests on the way, including Michelle Moan, Sir Chris Hoy, Mark Billingham from SAS Who Dares Wins, Billy, and back to Formula One, we've got Danny Kvyat, George Russell, and plenty more on the way. And we've got that date, July the 5th. It's looking more and more promising, isn't it, to go racing again. So lots to look forward to. I hope that you're all well and that you're coming out of these crazy times stronger for it. Make sure that you stay in touch with us, stay connected, and we will see you, at least speak to you again, very soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.